Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Golden Age of Radio with your host, Chuck Skull. And now, here's Chuck.
Okay, gang, it's Friday morning and a little bit of a late start. Sorry about that. I had some errands to run this morning. I hope all is forgiven. And we're going to start off with some laughs today. And some of you know I do have a background in comedy, worked at the comedy store for years. Sam Kinison's bodyguard, audience plant, all-around buddy. Hung out with some of the greats there. And I'm very into comedy. Everything I've done, I've had a sense of humor about, especially this year. So doing this, I get to play some of my heroes, some of the influences in my life and that. And I really enjoy that. And I'm glad you folks are tuning in to listen to this classic comedy from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm going to go ahead and start off with probably two of the biggest names in comedy, Abbott and Costello. Enjoy, folks.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camels, the cigarette that's first in the service, presents from the 6th Ferrying Group Air Transport Command at Long Beach, California, the Abbott and Costello Program. With the music of Big James and his orchestra, the songs of Connie Haynes and the Camel Five, tonight's guest, Miss Merle Oberon, and starring Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Oh, come on. What's the matter with you, Costello?
Hey, Abbott. What? I want to ask you a very personal question.
What is it?
Do you think I'm fat?
Well, I'd say you were on the plump side. Why do you ask?
Well, I was over by one of those big hangars. I was standing next to a blimp. All of a sudden, an officer points to me and says, "Look, they're making them with faces now."
Oh, he was just kidding. You know, there's nobody that has a better sense of humor than a flying man.
I know that too, Abbott, because I'm a flying man myself.
What do you mean?
I started flying when I was a 6-month-old baby.
You flew when you were a baby?
Yep. I flew out of my nurse's arms and made a perfect 1-point landing.
No. You mean 3-point?
No, 1-point. My safety pin was open.
Costello, I don't believe you've ever been up in the air.
Oh, yes, I have. I used to be a hostess.
Well, you walked into that one, my friend. For your information, plane hostesses are always female.
This was a male plane.
Tell me, Costello, when was the last time you were up in the plane?
Do you want the truth or my version?
Oh, no. I want the truth.
I think we'd get more laughs the other way.
No. Tell the truth.
Okay, I'll tell the truth.
All right.
I took my first plane ride today. Captain Dick Lasseter took me up in a great big plane.
Tri-motor?
Try what?
I said tri-motor.
Certainly we tried the motor. What do you think we did? Push it?
No, skip it.
I'm not going to get it up in the air and then try it.
All right, forget about it.
See, forget about the motor?
No. The other thing. By the way, what kind of a pilot is he? Was he flying blind?
No, he was perfectly sober.
What a dope. Of course he was sober. Well, never mind that. You know, Lou, I wonder what these boys down here at Long Beach do when they go on leave.
Well, I saw a bunch of the boys down at the beach with their girlfriends.
Did they go down there to spoon?
Well, they didn't go down there to wash their socks.
Well, here's Ken Niles. I've been waiting to see you, Ken. I was wondering what your wife thought of the picture we made last week.
That's right, Niles. What does she think of my acting?
Well, I don't mind telling you that she absolutely raved.
She raved, eh?
Yeah, they took her away the next morning.
What's so funny about that? Did you make that up yourself?
Yeah, out of my head.
You certainly are.
I hate that guy. I know you do, but quit arguing, Costello. I want to hear more about the picture. Did you read any reviews, Ken?
Yeah, sure. The Druggist Weekly gave the picture 4 aspirin.
See what happens, don't you?
He's got the band framed up.
Sonny's got the band framed. That wasn't a funny line. There was nothing, nothing funny about that, brother.
Well, can you imagine that?
Listen, Ken, I read all the reviews. And even Mrs. Roosevelt mentioned our picture in her column.
What did she say?
She said, my day was ruined.
Right.
That's the one line I don't know why they got it.
Look,
in.
Yeah, wait a minute, look. Lou, didn't we get any compliments at all?
Oh, sure. We got one cheer that I remember.
Where from?
The Bronx.
The Bronx?
You know, in Hitler's face without music.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe we should give up the idea of producing our own pictures, though.
Don't you be silly.
No.
Perfume Pictures Incorporated is here to stay, and I'm ready to start another picture right now. Push the button for my secretary.
Okay. Hey. What's the idea of a horn for a buzzer?
She used to be a waitress in a drive-in.
Oh.
Oh, boss, I'm sorry I was late this morning.
Are you doing anything tonight?
Why, no, not a thing.
Then try and get here on time tomorrow morning.
A fine secretary. How did you get a job here?
I used to be in pictures. I played in the way of all flesh.
What part did you play?
One of the meatballs.
Everybody gets slaps but me.
All right. Have patience.
By the way, do I have any appointments today?
Yes, sir. At 12 o'clock, you have an appointment with Hetty Lamar.
What am I doing after that?
Me, he asked.
Mr. Costello, could I speak to you for a moment?
Why, it's Botch for Twink, our sound man. What's on your mind, Botch?
Well, I want you to know that I was terribly hurt because I wasn't in your picture last week with Carmen Miranda. After all, if you're looking for new faces, look at me. My face is new, isn't it?
Oh, very new. In fact, your whole head has only been slightly used.
Please give me a chance, Mr. Costello.
Help.
I really do have a lot of talent. You know, I do most of the voices in all the Leon Schlesinger cartoons for Warner Brothers.
You don't tell me.
Yeah, for instance, here's a little Porky Pig.
This is the way I talk when I play Porky Pig. That's all.
I'll play Porky for you for $1,000.
What are you talking about? Warner Brothers don't pay you that.
I know, but pork has gone up.
What else do you do, Botsford?
Oh, did you ever hear of Bugs Bunny? I have a carrot here, so I'll give you a little sample.
What's up, Doc? What do you say, Chubby? What's cooking, huh?
Of course, if you use Bugs Bunny, you'll have to use my wife, Mrs. Bunny.
But we can't use two rabbits in our picture.
Well, we couldn't separate them. That would be splitting hairs.
Well, if you can't use the rabbit, maybe I could furnish some of the musical background. I can imitate an electric organ. Listen.
Clever, ain't he? Do you call it an organ? Now listen, Botsford. I can't use any of that stuff in my picture. Now will you get out of here?
Now look what you did. Now look what you did. Every time you yell at me, I get that.
When you yell at me, he gets that.
Why do you yell?
How would I know? Did I know that? When I talk loud, he gets the heat coming.
Costello.
Did I know that?
Well, don't yell at him. Do something for the poor fellow.
Please, Botsford.
I said, talk nice to him.
Botsford, I'm talking low and easy. Now, take it easy. No more hiccups.
That brings him out of it.
Does it? I didn't know that. All right, take it easy. How do you feel?
Better now.
Oh, you do?
I feel fine.
Oh, am I glad of that, Abbott. Now, let's get back to this picture.
But, Mr. Costello, are you sure you can't use the organ?
Botsford, how many times do I have to tell you that I don't...
Please.
I got it on again, didn't I?
I
know what I'm doing. Get out of here!
Hey, Lou Costello.
Oh, yes, Niles.
I want to ask you something. Do you know anything about winter sports?
Are you kidding? I'm one of the best ski jumpers in the country.
Really?
Sure. Last winter at Lake Placid, I made my biggest jump.
Yeah.
I climbed up to the top of the slide. Thousands of people were looking up at me.
Yeah.
And when I leaped into the air, I went down at 60 miles an hour, and I made a sensational jump of 200 feet.
200 feet?
Yep. And I could have even gone further if there was snow. Oh,
well,
much better tonight. Thank you.
Lou, I know another good skier, and his name is Dick Juris, and he's one of the finest skiers in the world. In fact, he's so good that the government asked him to give instructions to ski troopers in lightning-fast mountain warfare. Dick knows his smoking, too. He said, quote,
I've smoked Camels for years. They have the full, rich flavor that I want in a cigarette. No matter how often I smoke, Camels never tire my taste. never get my throat.
Unquote. Yes, and with many in all the services, Camel is the favorite, too, according to actual sales records in the stores where they buy cigarettes. Try Camels yourself for steady pleasure. You'll like the way they hold up, wear well, pack after pack, no matter how many you smoke. The reason is extra flavor. And you know, Camels always have more flavor. Better yet, Camels combine flavor with extra mildness. The extra mildness that goes with slow burning and cool smoking. One reason for that is costlier tobaccos, blended as only Camels know how to blend. Now remember, you're the one who's doing your smoking. Your throat and your taste will tell you.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camels, get it back tonight. Send a carton to that fellow in the service. Lee Stevens, the orchestra, and the Camel 5 with a new treatment for an old tune by the light of the silvery moon.
Costello, we can't hold up production on your new picture any longer. Now, we've got to get a leading lady. How about giving that secretary of yours a chance? She has blue eyes and blonde hair.
And a Supreme Court figure.
What do you mean, a Supreme Court figure?
A Supreme Court figure?
What do you mean?
No appeals. Oh! Besides, I phoned Merle Oberon about playing a leading part.
You did?
Yes. I picked up the receiver and I said, Merle, darling. Merle, sweetheart. Merle, my love.
And then?
Then I dialed her number.
Merle Oberon. Merle Oberon would be swell in our picture. You know, and I sent for a new fashion designer.
What is this that just popped in here?
What happened?
Well, now, wait a minute. I sent for a new fashion designer.
Is that it?
Now he's in. Come in.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm your new fashion designer. Pierre Huppier. To my friends, I'm P.U.
You said it, brother. Hey, get a load of that guy's hair. He's a male Veronica Lake.
Pierre, this is Lou Costello.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Costello?
Thank you, sir.
You are just the man I'm looking at. I've not seen you in a long distance.
Look at the way his hair hangs over his face. Pardon me, Pierre. Was your mother ever scared by a sheepdog?
Oh, come on. Leave the man alone. We've got to get him to design Miss Oberon's clothes. Now, no more remarks about his hair.
Looks like a palm tree in a high wind, doesn't it?
Well, Mr. Costello, I admit that my hair is a standing joke.
Well, it needs a new switch.
I don't know what's wrong there. Keep quiet. We must have Miss Oberon's wardrobe designed before she gets here. Pierre, would you mind telling us some of your ideas on women's clothes?
Oh, not at all. You know, the main thing is color harmony.
Color harmony? What's that?
Well, it's very simple, Mr. Costello. For instance, if you were carrying a pink bag, you would not wear a green dress, would you?
Oh, gracious, no. I wouldn't dare. Well, I'd be the laughing stock of my sewing circle.
All right, come on, never mind.
What kind of line is that never to get me a big man?
Forget it. Skip those things. Come here, Pierre. Now, with a shortage of materials, how about something plain for Miss Oberon to wear? We'll call it a defense dress. How about that?
How about making it out of barbed wire?
That isn't a fence.
It ain't exactly an invitation.
Go ahead, Pierre. Suggest a dress for Merle O'Brien. You know, something that she can wear in our picture.
Well, being a brunette, I would suggest that I make Miss Oberon a gown of apple green with a peach skirt, lemon trimmings, plum ruffles, an orange belt, and a tangerine scarf.
That ain't a dress. That's a fruit salad.
Nevertheless, that sounds fine. Now, what about Merle's hat?
Well, the hat should be very simple but very smart. Do you think the boys in camp here would like Miss Oberon in a hat that has three roses and a ribbon on the side?
Huh? No, they'd rather have four roses with a chaser on the side. Now, get out of here and I'll design the clothes myself.
Oh, Costello, you can't design clothes.
Is that so? I just invented a lady's leg paint that takes the place of stockings. It even covers the knees.
It disguises the knees?
You said it. You can hardly recognize the old joints.
Well, we let Merle O'Brien design her own clothes for the picture. What do you say?
Yes, and I'm just the girl who can do it.
Now, listen, kid, you keep out of this. Look who it is. It's Merle O'Brien.
Merle, I'm overjoyed.
I'm overcome.
I'm overwhelmed.
I'm over here.
Merle, I've always been in love with you. You're so beautiful. Can I give you a kiss?
Well, all right, but just one. Lou, where did you learn to kiss like that?
I used to be a bugler in a Boy Scout.
Now, look, if you folks don't mind, we'll go over the script of the picture that you are going to play tonight. It's a story of the knights of old. Merle, you play a beautiful princess.
And you wear a hoop skirt.
A hoop skirt?
Yeah, a hoop skirt. That's a parachute with legs.
Costello plays the part of a knight. He's in love with you.
I thought knights were tall.
Well, kid, on account of daylight saving time, the nights are getting shorter.
As the first scene opens, Merle, you're in the palace, awaiting the arrival of your lover. You are playing the organ.
Organ? Like this? Bosford, can I tell you that you couldn't be in this picture?
I'm sorry, Bosford.
Oh, I'm glad you are.
Now, keep out of the picture!
You did it again!
Don't yell at me!
Bosford, I'm sorry.
Will you please put a gag in his mouth?
Put a gag in his mouth? Yeah. If I had a gag, I'd tell it myself!
Come on, let's get back to this story. Costello, as a knight, your costume is a suit of armor.
That's right, Lou. You wear an iron coat, an iron vest, and iron trousers. In fact, you wear a whole iron suit.
Where do I get a purse? At Lockheed?
Now, your suit may become rusty, so you better keep yourself well oiled.
I'd have to be oiled to make love to you in an iron suit.
Merle, you walk out on the balcony.
Yes, and I sneak right up to it.
But how'd you get across the moat?
I caught the guard with his bridges down.
Then we have the big scene where Costello serenades you with a song of love.
And Lou, I will drop a flower on you.
In a mad moment of love?
No, in a pot.
Now, Merle, you signal that the coast is clear. And Costello, you climb the balcony. You reach Merle's side. You're panting from the long climb in that suit of armor. Yes, that's it. You gaze into her eyes. Remember, this is your big chance. Never mind, no more pants.
Never mind that.
There's emotion in your voice. As you stand there in your iron suit, what do you say to her?
Hey, kid, have you got a can opener?
Here's Connie Haynes with the Camel 5 with a new Roomba from the pen of Cole Porter. Hasta luego.
In a small cantina on an island far, Senorita Lena sang a song to a hot guitar. All the ding-dong dandies used to gather about when the lovely Lena, Lady Vina, would give in and give out. Hasta luego, married Lena and her rich old guy. Moved to Pasadena, where the best people go to die. But when she'd collected all his copper prefers, back to her cantina, lovely Lena went flying as she purred. Hasta luego. Too bad we must fall. Hasta luego. And there's mucha good luck, sweetheart.
Ladies and gentlemen, Perfume Pictures Incorporated presents the great costume drama entitled The Brave Knight Cut Off the Dragon's Tail, or The Dragon Isn't Wagon Anymore. The beautiful Princess Guinevere is played by Merle Oberon. Lou Costello is the brave knight, Sir Porterhouse, and Bud Abbott is his good friend, Sir Loin. I play the part of the king. As the scene opens, the princess and I await the arrival of two brave knights in our kingdom. Curtain.
Greetings, brave knights. Kindly approach the throne.
Greetings, Your Majesty. I am Sir Loin, Knight of the Bath from Saxony.
And I am Sir Porterhouse, Knight of the Bath from Constantinople. What kind of words did I give you?
Constantinople?
Yes, Turkish bath.
Greetings, brave knights. I am the Princess Guinevere.
And who are those beautiful dames with you?
They are my ladies in waiting.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Quiet, Costello.
Oh, Sir Porterhouse, you must save our kingdom. The people are angry. They're clamoring outside the gates of the palace. Just listen to them clamor.
Clamor.
Did you hear that? The people are revolting.
They certainly are.
No, the people are starving. They have not eaten in 5 days.
Oh, they should try and force themselves. They gotta eat. But, my dear princess, have we no food?
Alas, no. The dragon has destroyed our crops.
You mean all our corn is gone?
Yes. There's only enough left for this program.
What's so funny about that? What a fresh princess.
Listen to the people shouting. They have been shouting for 5 days, but I dare not speak to them.
I will speak to the people, Your Majesty. Open the door. I'll make a speech. People of Saxony! Get out! That got him.
Now, my dear princess, just what do you desire us to do?
My dear knight, for several years now, my father has been bothered by a terrible dragon.
Why doesn't he pick up his feet?
You don't understand.
You don't understand. Nobody understood that.
Today the dragon is coming to carry off the Princess Guinevere.
You must save me from this mean monster, Sir Porterhouse. He's a very mean beast.
Okay, kid.
He has two heads, one at each end.
How does he sit down?
He can't. That's what makes him so mean.
Well, don't be mean. Don't worry, Princess. All right, I'm allowed one mistake, ain't I? I am not afraid of nothing. One time I climbed up a tree and I bagged a ferocious tiger.
You went up a tree after a tiger?
No! He came up after me.
But you said you bagged him.
I did bag him. I bagged him to go away, but he wouldn't. Well, I snapped at the tiger. The tiger snapped at me, and suddenly something whizzed past me.
What was it?
Pomona.
Pomona. Talk sense, will you?
Then my uncle came to my rescue, and I finally brought that tiger home stuffed.
What was he stuffed with?
My uncle.
Oh, Your Majesty, the dragon is almost upon us. He's coming to get the princess.
Quick, princess, button up my iron suit.
Wait a
thought you were a princess.
I work at swing shifts on the side.
Costello, look at that thing belching smoke and fire. Is that the dragon?
It ain't a smudge pot.
I'm getting out of here.
It's too late. He's got a strap.
Here he comes. Now do what he does. Do exactly what he does.
Right.
He's staring at you. Stare back at him.
I can't. Cockeyed. I can't do it.
Quiet. He's roaring at you. Roar back at him.
That'll scare him.
Wait a minute. Now he's wagging his tail.
That lets me out.
Look out. Look out. He's going to charge.
He's going to charge? How much?
Quick, grab him, grab him.
There's a fancy line.
By the what?
The gullet, the dragon's neck.
Let him next. What do I care about their love life? Give me my sword, somebody. I'll cut his nose off.
But how will he smell?
That is something that should only interest another dragon.
Look out, he's coming at you. Be careful, Costello. Your back is turned to him.
He's coming up behind you.
Ow! He got me.
Where did he get you?
Well, if I was wearing a license plate, he would have got off the last three numbers.
Hey, he ruined my suit. My good iron suit he ruined.
You nasty dragon. Get out of here!
Oh, don't do that. Don't yell at me.
What is with this?
How can I do the dressing?
How can I do the dressing? Watch the quick. Now, stop. What can I do to keep you quiet, Buster? Will you cut it out?
Sorry.
And it's your own fault for hollering at him.
There's only one thing that'll cure my hiccups. If you let me kiss Miss Oberon.
Oh, very well. I'll kiss you. If only you stop those awful hiccups.
Go ahead, Buster. Kiss her.
Okay. How do you feel now, Botsford?
Oh, I feel fine.
But,
some tunes you whistle for a while and then forget, and others stay with you for years. I think the ones you remember are the ones that have character. I believe that goes for cigarettes, too. We say that Camels have character, and we back that up with the thousands of smokers who have stood by Camels for 20 years and more. We think it's true that more people have smoked Camels longer than any other cigarette. Try Camels and see for yourself. Try them in your T-zone. That's T for taste and T for throat, your own proving ground for cigarettes. Your taste will tell you that Camels have more flavor, and it's extra flavor that helps make Camels hold up day in and day out. Makes the second pack better than the first, and the third better than the second. Your throat will tell you about mildness, too. It's the best judge you'll find. Yes, Camels are mild, cool smoking, slow burning, because they're expertly blended of costlier tobaccos. Your throat and your taste will tell you.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camels, get a pack tonight. You'll want to buy a carton tomorrow. Here's more news about the Camel Caravans, those traveling shows which entertain the men in the army camps. 32 performances of the Camel Caravan units will be given to men in the training stations throughout the coming week. And now here are Bud Abbott and Lou Costello with a final word.
Thanks, Ken. Ladies and gentlemen, it's really been a thrill for Bud and me to do this program from the Ferry and Command Air Base here at Long Beach. And an added thrill to be here with Merle Oberon.
Thank you, Lou. I had a wonderful time, and it's been lots of fun.
That's right, Merle. And we'd like to extend our sincere thanks to Colonel Ralph Eastbake, Lieutenant Colonel John P. Frame, Jr., and their splendid staff of officers for the opportunity to make this visit.
Next week, we'll be back in Hollywood on Thanksgiving Day. In addition to the regular gang, we'll have as our guest Herbert Marshall. And we do hope you'll all join us. Until next Thursday, Bud and I wish you all a very pleasant good night.
The Camels present four great shows each week. Tomorrow night, the Camel Caravan with Lanny Ross, Xavier Cugat, Herb Schreiner, Lou Lair, and their guest star, Bob Hope. Saturday night, Thanks to the Yanks with Bob Hawke. Monday night, Blondie, and next Thursday at this same time, Abbott and Costello with their guest, Herbert Marshall. Our broadcast this evening was from the 6th Ferrying Group, Air Transport Command at Long Beach, and does not constitute an endorsement of our product by the War Department, as they do not endorse any product. The Army has also requested us to make this announcement to all men of 18 and 19. There is a serious need for young men, so serious that the Army is willing to let men of 18 and 19 choose whatever branch of service they desire. Go to your nearest Army recruiting office or induction station tomorrow. Learn about the jobs the Army has open in 13 different branches, all explained by men who know these jobs inside and out. Listen to the Camel Caravan tomorrow night with Manny Ross, Xavier Cugat, Herb Schreiner, Lou Lair, and their guest star, Bob Hope. And now this is Ken Niles wishing you all good night. Mister, if you've got a pipe that's biting you, why, it just means one thing. Your pipe's hungry.
Okay, gang. Abbott and Costello there. I love those guys. They always make me laugh. And they did some great shows for our troops during World War II, and this was one of them, of course. And Bumsford was actually played by Mel Blanc, as you could tell when he broke into the Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig imitations. And next we're going to go ahead and hit Fibber McGee and Molly. Excuse me, the throat's gone, been sick all night, so don't mind me, gang. Let's just go ahead and enjoy.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, the King's Men, and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Louisiana Hayride. Married man comes this haunting question. Button, button, who's got a button? And here with a buttonless shirt in his left hand and pointing an accusing finger at his spouse with his right, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
What's more, I'm getting pretty tired of finding my shirts with no buttons on them. Do you realize, Mrs. McGee, that this is the third time that this has happened?
When were the other two times?
Well, once was in June of 1908, and the other time was 1917, the Army turned me down on account of flat feet. In 1918, they took me anyway. It was in 1919, that's when it was. Or was it?
Oh, never mind, dearie. Hand me my sewing basket and I'll sew a button on that shirt.
Okay. Wow. Is this just a sewing basket? Look at the stuff you got in it. A Reader's Digest, bag of gumdrops, deck of cards, a radio script, a compact. Well, look, a hard-boiled egg.
That's a china egg, foolish. I use it to darn socks.
Oh, well, I wish you'd keep our scripts and our eggs in different places. Oh, come on, Molly, hurry up. I got to get downtown on important business.
What important business?
I don't suppose you think it's important who's going to be the next president of the United States.
Why, certainly it's important, but what have you got to do with it?
Oh, I'm going to meet the fellas in front of Joe's Tavern, and we're going to discuss it.
Oh. I see. The pool room primary. You always... Oh, McGee.
Now what?
I haven't any white thread. I'll have to run over to the 10-cent store and get some.
All right.
Get ready and come with me.
Okay.
Now hurry.
Well, I can't hurry any faster.
Well, why not?
I'm putting on this turtleneck sweater, and it's slowed me down. Always fuss about a little white thread. Hey, Molly. Molly, it's too warm to wear that fur coat.
Oh, it's never too warm to wear a new fur coat, dearie. Anyway, if it gets too hot, I'll just close my eyes and remember how much it costs. That always gives me a chill. Well, let's go. I think I'm going to be a success in this fur coat, dearie.
What do you mean?
I just saw the curtains twitch in Mrs. Gildersleeve's front window.
She stands in the window all day and checks up on the neighbors. When she was younger and her hair was redder, they called her the Orange Pico. Hey, look, Molly, here comes Mrs. Uppington.
Oh, goody. I was hoping we'd meet her today.
Goody? Oh, I see. On account of the new fur coat, eh?
Yeah. And if it doesn't make her face fall farther than they lifted it the last time, I'll be... Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? So nice to see you.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee?
Uppy, as the amateur ski jumper says when they asked him how the takeoff looked, hi.
Simply lovely day to be... Oh, my dear. Oh, what a gorgeous fur coat.
Here it comes.
Fur coat? Oh, yes. This. Ah, yes, it's just a little thing I had made up to bum around in. It's a Siberian chinchilla.
Really? Oh, you had it made? Huh? Oh, then it's yours.
Why, of course it's mine. I got it at the same place where you got the ermine wrap you wear at the opera. You know, the one you always have sent home on approval.
Well, really, it looks devastating on you, Mrs. McGee. It takes away that dumpy... I mean, you don't look so pudgy. Well, it simply does wonders for your figure, my dear.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Uppington. So sweet of you. And I do value your opinion so much.
Oh, now, please, my dear.
No, really. They say you were one of the best-dressed women in the country in your day.
And in the country.
So you really like my coat, do you?
Oh, indeed I do, Mrs. McGee. You know, I think I shall order two exactly like it. They make charming little rugs for my rumpus room. They'll feel so lovely underfoot.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, Mrs. Uppington. So few of our guests come barefooted.
Yes, I... What? Mrs. McGee, do you mean that my guests are... Very well. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Abigail. You should have got a pilot's license with that coat, Molly. I thought the fur was going to fly any minute. I'm kind of sorry, though, that you and Uppy ain't better friends.
Why, McGee?
Well, you two girls could have such a lot of fun together hunting mice.
Are you inferring, Fibber McGee, that your wife is Catty?
Oh, no, but it wouldn't surprise me to see you two sitting on a back fence some moonlight night singing a duet.
Now, look here, dearie. If you think I'm going to stand here and listen to... Why, McGee, you're catching cold.
Oh, no, I ain't either.
Well, you must be. Your eyes are watering and your nose is all red.
Now, that don't prove anything. Your Uncle Dennis always had a red nose and watery eyes, too, and he didn't have a cold.
We won't discuss me Uncle Dennis.
Okay. I think he's pretty unspeakable myself. Dad, rat to dad.
Oh, there, Mr. McGee.
Oh.
Hello, McGee.
How do you do, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Oh, hi, Throcky.
What are you sniffling for, McGee? You got a little cold?
Who, me? Oh, no, I'm just rehearsing for a masquerade party tonight. I'm going as a bird dog.
A bird dog, eh? You know, McGee, I'm sorry you're not a bird dog.
Huh?
Oh, I'd love to walk along behind you with a shotgun.
Oh, yeah. Well, look here, Gildersleeve.
You hear that, Mr. Gildersleeve? Don't you think McGee should go home and take care of that cold?
I certainly do, Mrs. McGee. You know, I take him home, give him an ice-cold shower, let him take 20 long breaths in front of an open window, then pile into bed with just a sheet over him and an ice pack on his head.
Oh, heavenly day. Go on, that'd kill me.
Yes. I believe it would, McGee.
Well, I didn't expect any sympathy from you, Gildersleeve. You got about as much tenderness as a nightclub sirloin.
Is that so?
Yes, that's all.
And you deserve about as much sympathy as a tarantula with a toothache.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Break it up here, boys. Break it up.
Well.
McGee, are you going to do something about that cold?
Yes, and I think the first thing I better do is get out of this big wind that's blowing around here.
What you really ought to do is go home and get a coat on, McGee. That turtleneck sweater you've got on is terrible.
Don't tell me what to wear, Gildersleeve. I know clothes.
Yeah.
I've been known as a snappy dresser all my life. Why, even as a tiny baby, I can remember my nurse showing me off to people and saying, ain't he a dapper little fellow? Dapper Diaper McGee, I was known as. Dapper Diaper McGee, the ding-dong daddy of doggy dressers, devastating dimple debutants as I dined and danced from dawn to dusk in my devilish dandifying diggity duds, duked in denim or dolled up in dinner dress with diamonds dangling from my digits, drawn dirty digs from disappointed dumbbells that didn't dare dude up in decent dry goods, and doggone if I wasn't disgusted and derided from a dilly drapery from Dutch Guiana's Dells of Death to the take it, Billy, I'm out of breath.
And Molly to return, I'd like your attention for just a minute. Here's some great news from Racine. Listen to this letter. Dear Harlow, don't forget to tell our listeners about the new consumer dividend we have just declared for all our loyal customers. A dividend of one-third more for their money when they buy Johnson's self-polishing glow coat and Johnson's paste or liquid wax. Tell every housewife that right now on most dealers' counters, she will find extra large packages of glow coat and Johnson's wax containing one-third more than the regular sizes. She pays only the regular price. The extra one-third is her free consumer dividend. Tell her we declared this dividend in appreciation of the way she has been buying these famous polishes. This offer is good on all important sizes, pints, pounds, quarts, gallons, and so forth, but only while the supply of these extra-large packages lasts. Tell her to hurry if she wants to get one-third more free next time she buys Johnson's Glow Coat or Johnson's paste or liquid wax.
Any farther. I think you ought to go home and go to bed while you're sniffling and sneezing.
Oh, no,
like...
I'm okay, Molly. Boy, this sure crept up on me quick, didn't it?
Well, try and close your pores a few minutes, dearie.
What do you mean, close my pores? What do you think my skin is made out of, Venetian blinds? Why did this happen to me?
Hi, but... mister. Hi.
Oh, hello there, little girl. You better not get too close to me.
Why?
I got a cold in the head. Or something.
It must be a cold.
Huh?
Hmm?
I says, look, don't you know colds are contagious?
I know it. Say, mister, you remember my doggie, Margaret?
Uh-huh.
He's got a bad cold, too.
Oh, oh, she has he? Incidentally, what kind of a dog is Margaret?
A poinsettia.
Go on. A poinsettia is a flower. It ain't a dog.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, no, it ain't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, no, it ain't.
Oh, yes. Well, I bet you Margaret is, I bet you.
You mean to stand there with your little half socks full of ankles and tell me your dog is a poinsettia?
I do. His mother was a pointer and his father was a setter. Will you give me a job after school, huh, please, will you, huh?
Go on. What could a kid your age do?
Take care of your baby.
We haven't got a baby. If we had a baby, I'd be glad to help you out.
Oh, that's okay, mister. I'll bring my little brother and take care of him. I got a job.
Hey, wait. Well, grow me a beard and call me Orson. You hear that, Molly? She's going to bring
oh,
up...
Oh, come on, McGee. I think it's time you did something for that cold.
Maybe I had better get a checkup, Molly. What doctor shall we go to?
Well, there's a doctor's office right over there. Huh? You see the sign? Dr. Snaffle?
Well, hello there, folks. How's everything?
I got a bad cold.
By the way, Mr. Wilcox, what do you know about that Dr. Snaffle across the street?
Oh, he's all right. Great hand with animals.
Animals? What? Oh, he's a horse doctor.
Sure, but he'll take care of you, Fibber. You're full of horse feathers. You see, he being a doctor, I often talk to him about
Look,
how...
Look, Harlow, hey, let go of me.
Oh, what's the idea, Mr. Wilcox?
Hey,
if you pull the neck of that sweater over his face like that, he'll smother.
Oh, no, he won't. No, he won't. But I wanted to tell you how I sold Johnson's Wax to Doc Snapper.
Hey,
I said, look, Doc, I said, being a doctor, you've got to have an office that's not only immaculately clean, but can be kept clean with very little effort. Just a minute, Fibber, just a minute now. I told him that Johnson's Wax would cut his office cleaning down to a minimum and would give that instant impression of gleaming, polished sanitation so important to a doctor's office. Quiet, quiet, buddy, quiet. No dust, no fingerprints, everything sealed against dirt and damp. Shut up a minute. So I sold him a big order of Johnson's Wax. Okay, Fibber, what were you saying?
Dad-dreaded luck. What's the idea? Pulling my sweater over my face and me with a sneeze. Coming on.
Well, look, the way Johnson's Wax beautifies and protects floors and furniture is nothing to sneeze at, and you know it.
Oh, my.
Well, I hope it's nothing trivial, pal. If I were you, I'd try Dr. Cyclops down in the next block. So long, kid.
Yeah, he sure loves his work, don't he?
Oh, he does.
That guy wouldn't mind going to the electric chair if it had Johnson's Wax on it. It'll be just a love seat to him.
Well, I suppose he certainly
is. Good day, my dear. And good day to you, Knucklebrush. Why, what seems to be a trouble?
Oh, he's got a bad cold, Mr. Boomer. I'm taking him to a doctor right now.
Totally unnecessary, my dear. I have with me the famous old Boomer remedy for a cold which has been in my family for generations.
Which, the cold or the remedy?
Both, Sniffle Snozzle. We were so susceptible to colds and coughs, we became known as the Whooping Boomers. This remedy was devised by my great-grandmother, Beulah Boomer, who was stolen by the gypsies when a mere child.
Oh, not really.
Yes, indeed. But she came back the next morning with four gypsies which she'd stolen herself.
Well, let's see the cold remedy, Boomer. Might save me a doctor bill.
Certainly. Now, where did I put Grandma Beulah's cold cure? Have it right here somewhere. Cold cure. Here's a small bottle of nitroglycerin. Have to be pretty careful with that. I remember young Louis the Lamb from Alabama got blown up that way. A careless fellow. But that was Louis all over. Here's a note from another unfortunate lad. Poor chap. Just discovered a gold mine in California. Terrible predicament.
Well, what's so terrible about that?
My dear, he struck gold while digging a tunnel under a wall in Alcatraz. Ah, what's this? Oh, yes, a small electric battery for a jockey's saddle. Say, tell me, do the horses around here run on AC or DC?
Can't you tell by looking at the plugs?
Go scratch yourself, Seabiscuit. Let me see now. Here's an entry blank in the Bob Hope baby naming contest. Odd circumstance. Toothpaste program giving a prize to name a person with no teeth. A check for short beer. Well, imagine that. No cold cure. I must get busy with a Ouija board and ask Grandma for another copy. Good day, my dear. Good day, beanbag.
Folks, the King's Men present their own beautiful arrangement of Lazy Rolls the Rio Grande.
Lazy river rolling along, roll, roll, roll.
why do I have to go and catch this?
Oh, heavenly days. Hurry, dearie. The doctor's just a few doors down the street.
Well, for scream's sake. Hello there, Cupie. Hello, Fizzle.
Why, hello, Mr. DePopulos.
Hi, Nick.
What in the name of, for the love of goodness sakes, is the matter with Fizzle, Cupie?
The poor lad seems to have just caught a bad cold in the head.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad, Fizzle. Why don't you try the remedies I'm getting from my brother? He just sent it to me day behind yesterday.
Who sent it to you, Nick?
My brother, Laos.
Huh? Well, that's a fine way to talk about your brother.
Oh, that is not meaning to be a derogatory remark, Cupie. That's my brother's name,
oh.
Laos.
Oh.
You see, when I'm being born, my mother is meaning to call me Nikolaus, but I am turning out to be twins.
Oh. Twins?
Sure. And so my mother is calling me Nikki and my brother Lousy. Oh. Well, you know, it was all very confusing, I'm thinking. All day long, people were always asking me, boy, are you him?
What about that cold cure, Nick?
Oh, yes. Well, first, Fizzer, you take a Greek steam bath.
Oh, well, what's that?
Well, it's kind of a wet hot foot, but all over.
Kind of a Turkish bath, eh?
Exactly. Only it's entirely different.
Oh.
With a Greek steam bath, you're leaving all your clothes on.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't hurt that suit a bit.
Well, is that all there is to it?
No. Then you're going right to bed and lay all night between the spring and the mattress.
Between the spring and the mattress? What's that for?
To press the suit. Then in the morning, you're taking 3 pills.
What kind of pills?
Personally, I like the round ones. And then you're taking hot eggnogs, and believe me, you're feeling like a different man.
Yeah.
Sounds very efficacious.
Oh, what's the difference how it tastes, Cupie? Can you remember all those directions, Fizzle?
Sure. A Turkish bath, a good night's sleep, a few round pills, and a hot eggnog.
That sounds like a marvelous remedy.
Yeah, I'll say it does.
See, it does, doesn't it? I wish you would write it down for me sometime in case I'm getting a case of influenza. And thank you very much for telling me about it. Well, so long, Fizzle. So long, Cupid.
What we really need, McGee, is a sure cure for all the people we know sure cures.
Well, here's Dr. Cyclops' office. Let's go in and find.
How do you do? I hope you have an appointment with Dr. Cyclops. He's extremely busy these days.
Well, how's he getting along with his book, dearie?
Oh, he's... Why, how did you know the doctor was writing a book?
Well, why should he be an exception?
I was going to write a medical book myself once, sis, but it was about a doctor that had his practice in Africa. And one day he started to give a gal a hypo, and when he pinched her, she gives him a dirty look and says, real haughty, Dr. Livingstone, you presume. My hot tonight. That ends the first chapter, and the climax of the book starts...
Oh, good morning, Dr. Cyclops.
Good morning, Miss Jones. My, just had an interesting case at the hospital. Man came in and couldn't stop laughing, simply howling with glee. But he's resting now.
Well, what was wrong with him, Doc?
Oh, just overwork. He was a good humor salesman. Are you waiting to see me?
Yes, we were, Doctor. Me husband seems to have a bad cold.
I'm Fibber McGee, Doc, and this is Mrs. McGee.
How do you do, I'm sure?
Oh, yes. Just step into my office, please. And Miss Jones.
Yes, Charlie.
Patience present, my pet. If Mr. Dobson calls again, tell him it is medically impractical to build up the fatty tissue in any particular location.
Yes, sir.
Tell him that if he must go to the doubleheader baseball game this summer, to take a cushion. That's all. Right this way, Mr. McSnipple.
McGee.
Oh, yes.
May I leave me fur coat with you, nurse?
Certainly, madam.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead, doctor.
Sit down, please.
Yes.
Now then, Mr. McGee.
Yeah.
You say you're a good humor salesman?
Yes. No, I ain't a good humor salesman. That was the other case. Remember?
Oh, yes.
Now, well, look, doctor. Me husband is suffering from a cold in the head. Will you please examine him?
Of course. Pulse, please. normal. Stick out your tongue.
Show him how you can wiggle your ears, too, dearie.
How am I, Doc?
Well, it's hard to tell, hard to tell. Ever had a bursitis? Any history of green apple colic? Bicycle knees? Feel any stiffness after seeing Gone with the Wind?
Well, I'll tell... Hey, Molly. Hey, look. I ain't got a sign of a cold now. I ain't even sniffed for 5 minutes.
Mr. McGee is right, Mrs. McGee.
Well,
he's
sure.
In perfect health.
Yeah.
No fever, no cold symptoms whatsoever.
No, boy, do I recuperate. I'm an easy bruise, but a quick heal.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor.
Oh, yes. I'd suggest you leave your name with Miss Jones as you go out for our mailing list. Having a special on fractures next week. Good day.
Well, thank you for watching me fur coat, dearie. And I'm glad to say there's nothing wrong with me husband. Hold me coat, McGee.
Okay. You see, sis, it was probably just some temporary... Oh, Dad. I thought that doctor says there was nothing wrong with me.
Well, if that's what the doctor said, you can depend on it, sir.
Oh, yeah. I suppose you think I go around sneezing for my own amazement.
Oh, no, sir. But you might be allergic to something. That would give you the same symptoms.
But McGee isn't allergic to anything that we know of.
No, the only thing I was ever allergic to in my life was rabbits.
That's right. Yeah. Rabbit fur always did make you sneeze.
Hey, rabbits! Hey, Molly! Rabbits! Don't you get it?
Get what?
That fur coat. It's rabbits. You got gyp.
What? I don't believe it.
That ain't a Siberian chinchilla. It's just a house and pepper house coat. Don't you get it, Molly? I says it ain't Siberian chinchilla.
It ain't Bunny, McGee.
Yesterday, a lady asked me, just what is genuine Johnson's wax? I answered, it is a blend of pure waxes, including the extremely durable Carnauba wax from South America, carefully blended to provide the toughest, most wear-resistant material you can possibly put on your floors. In order to have the very best waxes that money can buy, S.C. Johnson & Son maintain their own research laboratory right in Brazil, in the heart of the Carnauba wax country. There are many kinds of natural waxes. Some would be too hard for you as a housewife to use, others would be too soft. But Johnson chemists have had 50 years' experience in perfecting the blend of pure waxes which you buy as genuine Johnson's wax. They probably know more about protective household waxes than anybody else in the world. That is why genuine Johnson's wax gives such complete satisfaction. Why it protects and beautifies the floors, furniture, and woodwork of so many thousands of homes the world over.
What's that crate of potatoes on the back porch? Where'd they come from?
Oh, didn't you know, Molly? Governor Batalson of Idaho sent us them.
Oh, no, really?
Sure. Remember how we mentioned my Uncle Spud McGee of Pocatello, Idaho, a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Idaho appreciated the plug and sent us a box of potatoes.
Well, isn't that nice?
Yeah. So next week, we're kind of planning on writing a show around one of the big automobile plants in Michigan. Like, for instance, Cadillac or Lincoln.
Oh, wonderful. Are you listening, Governor Dickinson?
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night at this same time. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Sorry, gang, the button wouldn't press for me. Oh, it's one of those days, folks. And now we're going to go ahead and go with some Fred Allen. And once again, Fred Allen, probably most famous for his feuds with Jack Benny. But he's also another New England comic, so I got to go with Fred Allen.
Mr. Allen, Mr. Allen.
isn't the Jack Benny album a familiar joke, kiddie?
Fred Allen's show, with Fred's guest, Arthur Treacher. Portland Hopper, Minerva Pius as Mrs. Nussbaum, Alan Reed as Falstaff Openshaw, Parker Fenley as Titus Moody, the DeMarco sisters, and Al Goodman in his orchestra. And until I show up as Senator Claghorn, my name is Kenny Delmar. Today, ladies and gentlemen, most radio programs are giving things away. This program is different. We give you nothing. And to prove it, here he is, Fred Allen.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Kenny, you're right about radio programs giving things away. You know, the only trouble is that generally, the winners get the wrong things.
What do you mean?
Well, a leading question if I have ever heard one. Well, I shall tell you what I mean, Kenny. Last week on a program, let me see, that program, If You Can Lift It, Take It Away. No, that was another one. This was the following day. Oh, this program was called Musician for a Day. Now, on this program, an old lady, 89 years of age, won a set of bagpipes. Now, the poor old lady hasn't got wind enough to cool a demitasse. What can she do with the bagpipes? That is my question.
Oh, you're really making this up, Fred.
Kenny? Kenny, if I am lying, may you get a line with a laugh in it some night. I heard another program, Morons Are Funny, with some guy, Ralph Winkletter, I think his name is. And a man came to the microphone, Mr. Tomtit Nishball. I caught the name. And he missed his question, and they hit him right in the face with a lemon meringue pie. Then they gave him a Gruen watch.
Well, Mr. Nishball got a watch, didn't he?
Yes, but for 2 weeks, Mr. Nishball had meringue in his eye and couldn't see what time it was. So you see, Kenny, if you win a wheelbarrow... Well, Portland, too, yes. You're just in time, Portland. Kenny and I are talking about radio programs giving things away.
Mama won 2,000 cakes of soap and a sponge on the radio.
Oh, really? In a contest, was it?
I use Oh Boy Soap Because.
Oh Boy Soap Because. What was your mother's winning answer?
Mama wrote, I use Oh Boy Soap Because I'm dirty.
She had 23 words left over, huh? Well, tell me, what's new this week, Portland?
Did you read that some company wants to put music in the subway train?
Music, that's fine. That'll be like riding to work in a jukebox, won't it?
If they played the Star Spangled Banner in the subway, women might be able to get seats.
Well, how could they get the Star Spangled Banner? Lucy Monroe will not sing in the subway.
The subway could have its own song.
Subway songs? What song?
BMT for two.
BMT for two? Yeah.
Will you love me at Penn Station as you did at Union Square? She'll be coming on the shuttle when she comes.
I don't think it's going to work out, Portland.
Why not?
Well, the subway is losing money. Now, if it needs music, the mayor will be glad to go down in the subway and sing the blues. And speaking of business, we have no business here. You know, it's time we were getting down to Allen's Alley.
What is your question tonight?
Do you believe in hobbies? And if you do, what is your hobby?
Shall we go?
As Winken said to Blinken, why not? Ah, here we are back in Allen's Alley, Portland. Ah, that good air. Well, the senator's in all right. His hexing kit and voodoo mess jacket are here on the front veranda, see? Well, let's knock.
Somebody, I say, somebody knock.
Yes,
I... Claghorn's the name, Senator Claghorn, that is.
I know, you're from the South.
I've been in the house all day. I refused to come out.
Why?
The wind was blowing from the north. To Charleston.
Now, look.
I never go to the store club, son.
Why not?
That Billingsley's first name is Sherman.
Now, wait a minute.
Sherman. When I say that name, I'll wrench my mouth out.
Tell me, Senator, confidentially, Do you have a hobby?
My only hobby is home movies.
Oh, you have different pictures?
Only one picture, son. Gone with the Wind.
Your hobby is showing the same picture over and over?
Only one scene.
One scene?
Where Grant takes Richmond.
I see.
I run the film backwards, son.
You mean...
Richmond taking Grant. Come on, son.
Come on, son. Well, the senator probably thinks the girl in Gone with the Wind is O'Hara Scarlet. Well, I see Mr. Moody's light is on.
Howdy, Bob.
Tell me, Mr. Moody, have you a hobby?
Oh, I've had lots of hobbies. I've been on the radio twice.
Oh, with your hobbies?
Yeah. First time I went to New York with 200 pounds of putty.
200 pounds of putty, huh?
Saving putty was my hobby.
Well, what did you do on the air?
I just spoke my name, said the putty was mine.
I see.
The fellow that was running the program, he felt my putty and he says... No hard feelings, and thank you, Mr. Moody.
Thank you.
The audience stomped and whistled. They thought it was putty good.
Oh, Mr. Moody.
I picked up my putty and come home.
Well, you've had, since this putty episode, you've had other hobbies since?
Oh, yes. One time I was collecting deer ends.
Deer ends?
Yeah. Everybody was mounting deer heads. I started collecting what was left over.
Oh!
I had 20 deer ends mounted on the walls.
20 deer ends.
When I opened the door...
Yes?
Seemed like I was overtaking a herd.
What is your latest hobby?
Oh, I've given up hobbies.
Why?
Last hobby I had was giving moose calls.
Well, why have you given up your moose calls?
Well, one morning at daybreak, I went up to the top of a hill.
I see.
Put on an old fur coat and a fur cap.
Mm-hmm.
Got down on all fours.
Yeah.
I give out with a moose call.
Uh-huh.
Big she-moose come over the hill running.
Uh-huh.
She nuzzled up to me and started licking my fur cap.
The moose was in love with you, huh? Well, what did you do?
Well, I got up and explained matters as best I could.
And?
A big tear come into her eye.
And the moose?
She turned and walked away.
And that's why you've given up your hobby of moose calls?
Yeah, but somewhere in them hills tonight...
Yes?
There's a moose with a broken heart. So long, Bob.
So long. Well, I never suspected that Mr. Moody was a lady killer. Oh, well, let's try this next door.
No.
Ah, oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Moronica Lake.
Tell me, Mrs. N., do you have a hobby?
Since a little girl, cooking is by me a hobby.
Ah, you like to cook, huh?
From all kinds, different magazines, I'm cutting recipes.
Different dishes, huh?
From Health magazine, I'm making mock pot roast.
Mock pot roast?
You are mixing 2 pounds soybeans with the yolks of 2 eggplants.
Oh, that does it. Well, how does this mock pot roast taste?
It is all mock and no pot roast.
What other magazine recipes have you tried?
I'm making Nathan fish chowder.
What is that?
All kinds of fish, 2 quarts milk, and for luck, I'm throwing in 2 horseshoe crabs.
2 horseshoe crabs for luck. Well, that sounds good.
On top, I'm putting 2 sturgeon eyes.
Well, what magazine had this recipe, a chowder with 2 eyes?
Look.
Oh, look. That's fine.
And from Reader's Digest, I'm making a recipe.
Oh, from Reader's Digest.
It is 1 pinch flour, 2 drops water,
uh-huh.
3 grains sugar, 1 thimble Crisco, also 1/2 raisin.
You bake this?
It is coming out a cookie.
Oh. Well, if your hobby is cooking and you keep cooking these weird recipes, who eats them?
My husband, Pierre.
And what is Pierre's hobby?
Baking bicarbonate.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the last shanty in the alley. I wonder what will happen here.
Greetings all from the King of Ode. Falstaff's here with his weekly load.
Ah. Falstaff. What new poems are you toting tonight?
Have you heard The Toast of the Bronx is Mrs. Malone? She plays Ailey Ailey on her slide trombone.
No.
Or The Kangaroo's Pouch Was Stretched Too Far When a Cop Jumped In and Said, Follow That Car?
Howie! Tonight we're simply discussing hobbies.
Why am I here? Precisely.
I know what you have. What is your poem called?
Hobbies.
How does it go?
Hobbies are the current rage, the vogue among all classes. Millionaires have hobbies, likewise the lowly masses. Stamp collections, mustache cups, autographs and string, buttons, ships in bottles, and records sung by Bing. My so-called hobbies are unorthodox. I collect odd items, rare. Old racing forms, cigar butts I acquire here and there. A dirty wad of chewing gum, a discarded crust of bread, stubs of opera tickets, an orchid long since dead. My collecting isn't a hobby, you connoisseurs may say. You're right. Collecting is my profession. I'm a street cleaner on Broadway.
Thank you, Paul Stamp. And now from Paul Stamp and his gutter habitat, we turn to our kiddie choir, the five DeMarco sisters. Accompanied by Al Goodman and his refugee revelers, the DeMarco sing, You Won't Be Satisfied.
You talk my heart to crying shame. I'll bet you wouldn't like it if I did the same. You're only happy tearing all my dreams apart. You won't be satisfied until you break my heart. You won't be satisfied until you break my heart. You're never satisfied until the teardrop dies.
Was a jigger of two of Oh What It Seemed to Be, played by Maestro Al Goodman and his Bronx Bobcats. Someday I won't get here in time. The music gets shorter and shorter. Say, Portland.
Yes?
Did your mother like the birthday present I sent her? You know, Mr. Goodman's album of familiar waltzes?
Well, one of the records is cracked.
Really? Which one?
The Blue Danube.
Did she play it?
Yes. Mama said the Blue Danube sounded like Flushing Bay.
Fine. You could use that other now, right? Get this now. Fine. You could use that right here, too.
Do you think you could exchange the record?
Not I. If your mother wants to return that record, she can do it herself. I had enough trouble in that music shop.
What happened?
Well, the other afternoon, I started out to buy Mr. Goodman's album for your mother. I was walking down Broadway. I finally came to a music store called Jukebox Heaven. A little plaque in the window said, Carmen Lombardo slept here. As I opened the door, I heard a salesman arguing with a customer. The salesman said,
I'm sorry, sir, I never heard of that song. None of your blooming lip, you busted bounder. I'll have you sacked. Where's the manager? Manager?
Arthur Treacher. Arthur, whatever is the trouble?
Why, this obnoxious flunky refuses to sell me a record. Manager?
Now, stop yelling, Arthur. What song do you want?
Well, it's called Permitted to Precipitate.
Permitted to Precipitate. Oh, clerk, bring Mr. Treacher Let It Snow.
Yes.
Have you heard some of our others? Have you heard Hammerstein and Rogers' masterpiece, It Might As Well Be Spring?
The lyrics are positively silly.
Silly?
Now, that line, I'm as busy as a spider spinning daydreams.
Well?
A spider spinning daydreams? Have you ever seen what comes out of a spider? It looks like a lot of dirty dental floss.
Now, wait a minute.
And that other line,
I feel so gay in a melancholy way.
Arthur! It's definitely paradoxical. It is emotionally impossible to feel gay in a melancholy way.
Oh, I know what you mean. It's like a mortician smiling. Gay in a melancholy way. Well, look, Arthur, if you don't like our American songs...
Fred, I want to take some new American numbers back to England with me. Haven't you something else London has never heard that I can take back?
Say, how about hillbilly music, Arthur? Now, London might be go for hillbillies.
You mean those rustic blighters who walk around with no bottoms on their specs?
Would you... Would you like to try a hillbilly role?
I say that might be jolly.
Good. Ladies and gentlemen, we present the premier performance of Great Britain's first hillbilly star, Elmer Treacher, in a stirring rural drama entitled... Since he grew too tall for the family trailer, Mammy's little baby needs shortening, shortening. Music, maestro.
Breakfast ready, Zeke. Come and get it.
What's for chow, Ma?
Owl eggs and possum chow, Paul.
Owl eggs again. Yeah, I'll get my teeth and be right with you, Ma.
Howdy, Pa.
Howdy, son. Son, was there any letter at the post office this morning?
Want nothing, Paul.
Consign the major. Why don't he write?
Pa, it's 10 years since you was with that Major Bowles unit.
Ma, the last words the major said when the unit broke up in the basement of that Turkish bath at Little Rock. Zeke, the major says, when I want you again, I'll send the word.
I'll be ziggity dig dog. When the major sends the word, Paul, can I go with you?
You keep practicing your tissue paper and comb, son, and I'll take you. Take you along. Fetch you with me.
Effen, you're taking Elmer to the city, Paul. Reckon it's time you had a little talk with him.
Think so? About the... about the bees and flowers?
I can tell a bee from a flower, Paul. A flower don't sting you.
How old are you, son?
Well, I've been keeping count, Paul. I'll figure it out.
Good, Elmer. Now you get to figuring.
All my fingers.
That's 10.
All my toes.
20.
All my fingers again.
30.
The toes on my right foot.
That's 35.
And this year, I'm up to the big toe on the left foot.
You're 36, son. Elmer, it's time you know about women.
Women? Yahoo!
Son, Elmer, Elmer! Son, come down off that wall.
Oh, shucks, Pa.
Jeepers, it's time he knowed, Ma. Hand me the Sears Roebuck catalog, will you, Ma? Now, where's that female Belle Brigand section? Here it is. Now, Elmer.
Here, Pa.
There's two kinds of humans. Pants wearing uns and skirt wearing uns.
Here, Pa.
The skirt wearing uns is the women.
Oh, poor.
Now, here, Ma. Put the catalog back. The boy ain't ready yet. Fuzz on his lip fooled me.
Elmer never learned nothing around here, Paul. Let's get up and go to the city.
Oh, I ain't budging till the major sends the word.
You could have sold this shanty to that man that come round last week. He sure was anxious.
Yeah, I said this was last place in the country he had left.
We ought to go, Paul. The land's poor. Cows are so weak, they got to lean against the barn to move.
Jeepers, Pa. Watch that shooting.
I'll be double ding-dong past the Joneses again.
Fake my deal and call me Hezekiah. I thought we killed all them Joneses.
A new batch of Joneses come yesterday, Pa. They're starting up the field again.
Oh, dang, dude, there goes our picture of Senator Claghorn, Ma. Folks, grab your guns and start firing. Hold your fire. We got him. We wiped out them Joneses again.
Let's pack up, Pa, and get.
Ma, we're musicians. We ain't a-leaving till the major sends the word.
Paul.
What's up, Elmer?
Boy, one of them there Joneses are coming across the creek. He's waving a white flag.
Open the door, Elmer. Keep your distance, you varmint Jones.
Don't shoot, Zeke.
This is your grand finale, how to do and climax, Jones.
Don't put the dozens to me, Zeke.
Say, hey, you're a new Jones, ain't you?
I just come back.
Yeah?
I was the little Jones runt that run away with the washboard 20 years ago.
You ain't little no-count shirt-tail Spike. Spike Jones.
Yeah? You just killed off my whole band. Huh? I need musicianers. I heard you was musical family. Major Bowles told me.
Ma, the major sent the word. Elma, get out your comb. Ma, start lipping your jug. The good old major has put me with the only Major Bowles unit left, the Spike Jones Band.
How about a song, Zeke?
Let her rip, Spike.
Stop a while and listen to my story. Just come down from the hill.
I went there to find my childhood sweetheart, but she's gone, her voice forever still.
Oh, they cut down the old pine tree, and they hold it away to the mill, to make a coffin of pine for their sweetheart of mine. Oh, they cut down the old pine tree, but she's not alone in the hill tonight. For it's there my heart will always be so. They drift there apart, still they cut down my heart, when they cut down the old pine tree, that old pine tree.
This has been the Fred Allen Show with Fred's guest, Arthur Treacher. And now, as a special after show for our Armed Forces listeners, the five DeMarco sisters gather around the microphone to bring you a few of the songs you have requested them to sing.
I do a choo 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 fast as I can take a choo choo.
Okay, folks, I want to thank you for joining me today. I'm going to be calling it quits a little early today. As you can tell, I can barely talk, and I still have to work tonight, so I'm going to crawl back under my bed like I've been doing all night. And I'll see you folks tomorrow morning on Chuck Skull's Golden Age of Radio on the Wacko Network, and tomorrow night with Cat Vecchione on World Talk Rock Report over at the Wacko Network. Till then, have fun and play safe, gang. I'm crawling under my bed.